Hello everyone and welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 FM. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you please help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer?
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And thank you for joining us all this morning. Today our speakers are Jim, Siobhan and Matt, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. Okay, so could we start with you please, Jim?
Well, good morning everybody. My name's Jim and I'm an alcoholic. My story. Well, I guess I drank pretty much like everybody else that I was involved with. I was a social drinker. I didn't drink a great deal. Just on occasions I'd get drunk. Most of the time it was a few beers here and there. And that's how it progressed for me for quite some time. And then I found myself with a lot of time and a lot of money, which was a very bad combination for me. And my drinking escalated. And this is in hindsight. At the time, I thought I was having a great time, which I was, I suppose. But it was a slippery, slidey slope that gradually increased. And I found myself drinking huge amounts, way beyond what I'd ever thought I'd ever do. Never, ever thought I'd be drinking in the morning. But that's what I progressed to. And time went on and I was in trouble from different sources, trashing vehicles, all that sort of stuff. And nothing seemed to be bad enough for me to stop. I did try on occasions on my own and with limited success. I think I went 6 weeks at one stage, and I invariably went back drinking again, until one particular time things really came to a head. And they talk in AA, they talk about people reaching their rock bottom, and that was my rock bottom. I knew I had to stop. And fortunately, I'd met a friend of mine some months before that, female friend. Hadn't seen her for a little while. And I said to her, "How are you doing?" She said, "Oh, I'm doing really well." I said, "Oh, that's good." She said, "Yes, I'm 18 months now." And I said, "18 months what?" She said, "18 months without a drink." I said, "Whoa, that's pretty impressive." She said, "Yeah, I go to my meetings." I said, "What meetings are you talking about?" She said, "Up the hill, Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, "Oh, okay, good for you, you know." not really what I was had in mind. So when it turned to custard for me, I remembered what she said. So I made some inquiries, found out what night the meeting was, and I went up and knocked on the door, and I've never looked back. It was the most amazing thing to happen for me. It changed my life. It gave me the tools not only to stop drinking, which I'd done, but to stay stopped. And that was the key. But not only to stay stopped, but to have a good life as well. And I owe my life today to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been a journey, and it's been quite some years now. And in fact, I look back and I was very proud of the fact that I never did drugs. I stayed away from drugs. But in actual fact, alcohol is a drug. And I succumb to that. But today, I don't need that, and I've got a pretty good life. It hasn't all been a smooth ride. There have been some pretty rocky situations along the way. But I've learnt so much in AA, and one of them that I hang my hat on is that nothing's so bad that a drink isn't going to make worse. It certainly won't make it better. And I'm happy with that. I'm happy because I can, whatever comes along, I can use my skills that I've learned in AA. I don't need to drink about it. In fact, drinking's not really something I think about a lot nowadays. I'm involved in the entertainment industry, and, you know, obviously there's a lot of alcohol involved there. I don't, it doesn't bother me, and I doesn't bother me if other people drink. In fact, I like to see people enjoying themselves and having a drink and what have you, but it's not for me anymore. I'm actually quite terrified of what would happen if I did pick up. It would be absolute disaster. I'm convinced of that. So I keep coming to meetings, and I keep listening to what people are saying, and more often than not I get something that I can use, and I hang my hat on a couple of things. If I keep coming to meetings, listening to what people are saying, I don't pick up that first drink because it's the first one that does the damage, and I keep coming to meetings, then I've got a chance, and so far it's worked pretty well. So thanks for asking me to share.
Thanks Jim, for your sharing. And next we have Siobhan, who's come to share today.
Hi, I'm Siobhan, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for asking me to share. I think the message that AA has brought to me is that, as the previous speaker shared, it's always the first drink, which brings us back to drinking. My experience of drinking was that when I started off as a younger drinker, I think at 14, I always drank very differently to everyone else around me. Most of my friends would get drunk and go home. I was always the person that wanted to continue the party. I would always be looking for the last drink, and I'd like the party to go for days and days as opposed to just sort of going home and recovering. And then as I went into my youth and into my 20s, that continued. By the time I got into, I suppose, my late 20s, I recognised that I did have a problem, that whenever alcohol was involved, there was often blackout, there was often disastrous fighting and just chaos around me. It was just chaos within my family. I could never remember exactly what happened. I just knew that I'd get up and I would feel like I had to apologise to everyone. So I just went through life feeling guilty and ashamed all the time, but I half the time didn't even know why. And I didn't really associate it that much to drinking because I craved having a drink to escape the life that I was creating around me. So it was this sort of juxtaposition of wanting to escape, escaping, creating more chaos, and then needing to escape again. I just felt so much guilt and shame around that. As my drinking continued, I sought help from various other institutions. I went to CADS three times and my GP once, and you know, I explained to them that I didn't feel like I drank like other people, that you know, I thought having children would stop me from drinking, I thought getting married would stop me from drinking, and each time it sort of failed to put a brake on it. Sometimes it slowed it down a little bit, but within a very short time I'd be back to drinking really only about a bottle of wine a day. So it wasn't copious amounts of alcohol, it was more the effect, it was needing it at a certain point of the day. It was, you know, the ritual of having it, and then the feeling of waking up feeling sick the next morning, and then promising I'd never do it again, and then by about lunchtime thinking that I was probably feeling okay now and that one wouldn't hurt. And it was always that first one. As soon as I had the first one, it was going to be a bottle. And that increased in its amounts as things progressed, but so did the chaos around me. The problems that I started causing and creating got worse and worse and worse. The repercussions started extending right out. I always associated an alcoholic with somebody that was lying in the park drunk under a blanket or something like that. And I wasn't that person. I was still showing up to important lineups. I was still travelling internationally, business class, lived in a big home, kids were at private school, drove an Audi. And I used to really be proud of that when I first attended meetings, but, you know, I didn't remember the part where I was driving drunk, you know, and turning up to all of these meetings under the influence, going to bed without remembering and needing drugs in the morning to get back up to go back out and do the same thing again. So as a result, I suffered quite a lot of organ damage and started really losing the plot, started crushing relationships around me. People really didn't want to have that much to do with me anymore, but no one knew what was really wrong because I'd hidden everything for such a long time. Half of the fear and shame I started experiencing now was the hiding. So then by this stage, I was hiding the fact that I drank and hiding the times that I was starting, how much I drank. I was hiding bottles, which is a really common, I think, proof of the fact that you've got a problem. Once you start hiding bottles, things are starting to head pretty south. And then I would always start thinking about, you know, like what would, where could I stack something the next day so I would have something for when I needed that first drink the next morning. So I started pre-planning my drinks. Everything fell down around me. It was a big fall from grace. I ended up in a rehab after being hospitalised for pain in my back, where they discovered that my alcohol levels were so high. And still I denied that I was a drinker. I still pretended that there was nothing wrong with me, even though hospital tests showed very, very clearly I was starting to suffer from liver damage. So I was popped into a rehab, and at rehab I was introduced to AA. I still was really resistant to come. I didn't really want to, because I felt that if I went to a place called Alcoholics Anonymous, then I would have to admit that I was an alcoholic. And deep down, I didn't want to stop drinking. I'd done it all my life. I had no idea how to survive in the wild without the, you know, the false hero of my addiction, because I'd survived on it for such a long time. It was like my superpower, I thought. And so I came into the program, but I sort of didn't really, it was a bit of lip service. I did what everybody else did, smiled, laughed, read the books, and quoted everything out of the book. But I relapsed three times, and I had three different sponsors, and finally one of them said to me, "You're lying. You're absolutely lying to yourself. You're dishonest." And I had been sneaking little drinks here and there, and I had been dishonest, and I hadn't got honest with the fact that I really was an alcoholic. I had still lived in denial, and I was an Alcoholics Anonymous, waiting for the time where I could start to drink like a normal person again. And the problem with being an alcoholic is that you'll never drink like a normal person, whether it's physiological or mental. There's never a chance that you'll ever return to it being a normal drinker. And so at my third relapse, I finally surrendered. There's a part in the program about surrender. And the surrendering part, you know, means giving up your old life, really, giving up all the ways that you treated it before. It means sometimes removing friends and situations, jobs, locations, to start afresh. And I spent the next 2 years full-time in recovery, at least the full year. I went to between 3 and 10 meetings a week. I'd always know where the next meeting was in case I felt the need to pick up a drink. So I would have a list every day of if things started. Anxiety was a big part of the problem that I did drink, especially social anxiety. So when I got social anxiety or I got anxiety about life, I would have a meeting to go to before I picked up that first drink. And if I could get through the hour of the meeting, that was still an hour that I didn't pick up a drink. It was so much compulsion to drink. The physiological side was very difficult in the beginning. It felt like skin being peeled off. But what I got encouraged about at the meetings, you know, was that I got through that next hour, that there were people who were also going through it at the same time as me, that we all felt the same way. I think part of being an alcoholic and a person in addiction is the isolation. You feel like you're the only person in the world that could be, you know, like could possibly feel like this. And in a group, in a community of other people, I found strength and I found hope, because I also saw other people that had recovered. You know, no one in my family had ever stopped drinking. I'd never seen recovery. I'd never been in a home where there wasn't alcohol served every night. So I didn't know what that looked like. So I had to learn to live again. But I saw other people around me laughing and having a good time, and then turning their success, you know, into other successes, getting their children back, you know, leading successful careers, having friends they could be honest with that they weren't hiding from all the time. So I continued with AA. And I have now been in recovery for about 7 years. I'll be celebrating my 5th year of proper sobriety this November. It was coincides with the death of my father, who actually died of alcoholic-related disease. And I'm always really proud on that day, because, as I said, no one in my family had ever stopped drinking. It was just something that you continued until you died. And I'm so grateful to the program. I'm grateful the support that I get through that. I'm grateful there's so much availability of it in the country. There's a meeting anywhere. There's online meetings. There's always someone to call out to when things get tough. And, you know, addiction is a disease of isolation. And, you know, being honest and being able to reach out and ask for help has been a game changer in my life. So I'm kind of a bit proud to be part of this program, and, you know, offer it to other people as well, and give them a place they can go to when they feel like they've run out of hope, ideas. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for letting me share, Judy.
Thank you so much, Siobhan. That was absolutely great. And Matt, would you like to share with us now, please?
Oh, thanks, Judy. It's great to be here this morning and doing some service, and you know, it's the fact that service keeps you sober, and I'm very keen on doing whatever it takes to stay sober this time. And my story is largely about the revolving doors of AA, and where it all began really was when my mother gave up drinking when I was 8 years old, and my life changed for the better from that. However, I kind of set out to become an alcoholic as a result, and sort of achieved that fairly quickly. My first drink was around about, you know, 12, 13. It was a Trav Lion Red, and, you know, typical vomiting and feeling pretty bad, but knowing that, you know, I wanted more of this thing. And then, as, you know, as time went on, you know, I discovered other things. I think I had my first joint around about 13, and that changed my life, you know, and alcohol and drugs gave me everything I was looking for, you know, confidence, you know, I could be cooler, you know, I laughed a lot, and then I got really hungry. So, you know, these are all good things as you're growing up. So I had a great time, largely speaking. But then, you know, by about 17, it's when the blackout started arriving, and that's when you go out at night and you can't remember parts of it when you wake up in the morning. And, you know, mostly it's funny, but then sometimes it's not. And one time in particular, I got arrested in town during a blackout, and, you know, ended up in the drunk tank for a few hours, and after that experience, decided that it, you know, maybe it was the whiskey causing the blackout. So I stuck to beer after that, and you know, eventually the blackouts continued. So it's not a fun thing to keep happening to you. So by around about age 24, I had a list of 30 problems that I couldn't solve, and I thought to myself, maybe I'll give this AA thing a try. So I phoned my mum and parents and went to my first meeting on September 1997, and, you know, largely got sobriety in the most part for the early days, and you know, went to a lot of meetings, especially in Takapuna in those days, which are really big meetings, and a lot of good sobriety there and a lot of good messages. You know, I saw people have, you know, 40 years birthdays there, and it was just amazing. So, you know, but, you know, someone said to me, you can't be, you know, 5 years sober in 2 months, so you have to do some work. You know, so I did things. I felt nervous. I did the dishes quite a lot because it helped me get through, and it's also service, so that was really good. But I also had this nagging feeling that I was too young for AA. You know, I was 24, and all my friends are having a great time and doing things that you do with alcohol and other things. And so eventually, you know, that maybe I'll try it again, maybe it'll be different this time, came up. So, and thus began the revolving door of AA for me. And it is a revolving door because, you know, you can go out there to do some more research. You can always come back. People will welcome you back with no judgment. That's kind of how we do it. But so for me, I would go through a pattern of, you know, going out there and doing the research for a couple of years, making a big mess of it, but knowing that AA would be my backstop. So I'd always come crawling back, you know, and you know, sober up. You know, I never had a problem stopping drinking, but I'd always start drinking again, you know, and that's a true sign of an alcoholic or an addict if you just can't stop. So, and a lot of times it's really confusing as to why this keeps happening, and it comes down to a few basic things where I wasn't doing the suggested things in AA. You know, I had a look at those 12 steps on the wall, and I kind of did some of them, not very well. You know, the spiritual side of it, you know, I said the prayers, but did I really have conscious contact with my higher power? You know, perhaps not. And ultimately, honesty, as we've heard mentioned. So if you can't be honest with yourself, it's really hard to do this program. So, and you know, the fact of the matter is that I've got a mind that can't leave it alone and a body that can't handle it. And it's just, you know, it's really hard for people when they come in to adopt this new way of life that involves not drinking. So, you know, fast forward, I don't know how many relapses I've had, but more than I can count. And it comes to the point for me, and I think most people, where it comes from, if you're coming in from a point of desperation where the alternative is, you know, not a good one, and you're forced to do something, then this is what kind of happened to me this time around. So, you know, I knew I had to change the way I was doing AA. So just coming to meetings for an hour a couple of times a week will get you sober in the beginning, but it won't keep you sober. So it's kind of a few things have to happen. So, you know, one is going through the 12 steps and having a spiritual awakening as a part of that. It's adopting a higher power, because I can't do this by myself. You know, I need assistance from not just the group, but from, you know, from the universe. Because at times, you know, and it's happened to me a lot of times, you have no mental defense against that first drink. So it has to come from a higher power. So by throwing myself into the steps, working through them, and actually, you know, started sponsoring a couple of guys too, because I haven't done that for about 25 years, and working with others is great. You know, you've got to give this thing away in order to keep it for yourself. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm just trying very hard. One of the tools that I use, I talk about quite a lot, is the Joe and Charlie tapes and the study of the Big Book and the 12 Steps, because it really helped me understand you know, what it's all about, and it's easy to listen to. It's on the AA Everything app if you're interested. Yes, I mean, I'm grateful that I don't have to keep repeating that pattern today. You know, I'm counting the days. It's a program of days, not years. And, you know, 24 hours is the world record for sobriety in anyone's language. So, you know, I get up in the morning and I do my reading and I ask for another sober day, and invariably I get it. And, you know, from here, where to from here, really? Well, it's just about continuing to do the things that I know I need to do to keep me sober. I'm not perfect all the time. You know, there's progress, not perfection. So, as I said at the beginning of the meeting, so I just try and do the things that are going to keep me on the right path, connected with my sponsor, connected with the meetings, and doing service such as this. So thanks very much, Judy. Cheers.
Thanks so much, Matt. Right, that brings us to the end. So thank you to Jim, Siobhan and Matt for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Could we now all close the meeting, please, with the Serenity Prayer?
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Waterwall Jam. We'll be right back.